Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into another edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios, right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. I think we have a fun show lined up today. I want to talk baseball movies. We'll get more in depth with this conversation in the coming weeks. But really what spawned this idea for a segment, the other night, I'm sitting in bed. My daughter wants to watch a movie, so we turn on Disney Plus, and she wants to watch a baseball movie. And Rookie of the Year, you know, the movie where the kid, he's a pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. She decides she wants to watch that. What an awful movie that was. Oh my goodness, what a terrible movie. So right now, I got the itch for baseball. We don't have any baseball. Last week, it's supposed to be opening day. We don't get opening day. And I think we're probably about 2 months out from getting the start of the regular season for baseball. I got the itch for baseball. I'm going to recommend you a good baseball movie, and I'm going to have a friend join me on the show as well. Steve Bordstein, he's joined me for years here on the show. I couldn't think of anyone else to have this conversation with than Steve. And the reason being, we have completely different tastes in movies. All right, I'll give you my favorite baseball movie. The Sandlot's got to be one of them. It's not my absolute favorite. I probably have to side with League of Their Own. That's probably my favorite. I love Major League as well. It all depends on the type of mood I'm in. But don't watch Rookie of the Year. Don't waste your time. If your kids want to watch that, show them a League of Their Own or something. That movie was just awful. So we're going to have a segment on which baseball movie you should watch tonight if you got that itch for Major League Baseball. We're also going to be joined by an author. His name is Brad Baloukjian. And what makes this story, the book is called The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. And what makes this story so unique, he had a pack of 1986 Topps baseball cards. And he decided before he opened up that pack of cards, I'm going to track down every single player in this pack, and I'm going to write a book about my experience in tracking them down. Fantastic, isn't it? I mean, I see unopened packs of baseball and basketball cards from the late 80s, early 90s all the time. My grandpa used to own a sports card shop. So I see these packs of cards all the time. Never in a million years would I have thought, I'm going to open this pack up, and I'm going to try to track down an interview with every single player in this pack of cards. Not a bad idea. Maybe it's something we'll try here on Drive Time Sports, but he's got some terrific stories. We're going to talk about the Wax Pack, who he pulled out, and some of the struggles. He got in his car and drove nearly 12,000 miles trying to track down these guys. I think it's going to be a fascinating story. He's going to join us next segment here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to get to that in just a bit. Before we break, though, for the local sports update, let's take a look at the national sports headlines, and we will begin with the NFL. It is now official. Owners have expanded the playoff field to 14 teams in the NFL. This closes a deal that had widely been speculated about. Seven teams. So it's one additional team, and only the one seed will now get a bye in each conference. 14 playoff teams. The league nearly did this about 6 years ago, but they put the plan to the side. Probably was a bargaining chip for the next CBA, and now in the new CBA, salary cap calculation of revenue from an extra playoff game, it gave the owners a route to bring in more money for one more additional playoff game. So now we have seven. Think about this. This is the way it's going to go down. Six wild card games. They're going to be played back to back to back. Triple headers during wild card weekend. It'll be on January 9th and 10th. One of the new games is going to be set for a 2:40 Eastern kickoff time. It's going to be on CBS And then there's going to be a separately produced broadcast on Nickelodeon that's geared to a younger audience. Think about that. Trying to get football to a younger group. How's that going to work out? It's one of the nuances to this new deal that the NFL is working on. Now, the number 7 seeds will play the number 2 in that round, meaning that number 1 only gets a first round bye. So it's 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6, 4 versus 5. When you think about a 1 seed getting a bye, how important is that? It's huge. Over the past 7 seasons, every Super Bowl participant received a bye in the playoffs. The last team to make it that far without a bye was the Baltimore Ravens. For that reason, being the number 2 seed in the NFL does not mean anything anymore. And I'll tell you, when teams knew they were number 1 or number 2, they'd rest starters. Week 16, week 17, it didn't matter. They would rest starters. That's not going to be the case anymore. You want that number 1 seed. Number 2 seeds have won the past 2 Super Bowls and a total of 5 since the postseason format changed back in 2002. Okay, so any analysis that you do on this, the best teams are most likely to have the best regular season records, so they're number 1 or number 2. That's the way to look at it. But the number 2 seed will face a more difficult path now because they no longer get a bye. Does this water down the NFL playoffs? We'll have this conversation a little bit later on the show today as well. So a lot of baseball talk. I'm really looking forward to our guest who's going to be joining us in just a few moments. His name is Brad Balukchian, and again, he is the author of the new book, The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. Plus, we'll talk some baseball movies, one of those barroom conversations. That's coming up here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Auto Farm Studios, and we're back in just a moment.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball. Deep to left field. Way, way back. It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I think this next guest and story is going to be extremely interesting. We've had a number of authors on this show over the last 10 years, but none quite like this. There's a new book that is going to be released tomorrow. It's called The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. It's written by Brad Balukchian, and he is joining us right now over the phone to talk about not only the inspiration for this story, but how it all came together. Brad, first off, it's a pleasure. I appreciate the time today. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this conversation because, well, your story, your book, it is so unique. I've never heard anything like it. So let me get this straight. You came across a pack of 1986 Topps baseball cards that was sealed. You opened it and decided to track down each player in that pack.
Yeah, and to be fair, it wasn't completely serendipitous. I mean, I had the idea, having collected cards from that era, that you really need to get a pack that had never been opened and use that pack as sort of the device to figure out, you know, what happens to these guys after they're done playing, the guys that I grew up watching. So I ended up getting a pack that had never been opened before, and then that was sort of, I said, okay, whatever. You know, just like you're playing cards and you get a hand dealt to you, whatever hand is dealt, that's what you got to play. That was the device for how to kickstart the book project.
It's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. And I think so many people can relate to this because who didn't collect baseball cards as a kid, right? Everybody did.
Exactly. No, it's a generational thing. I mean, I call, you know, baseball, I'm 39 years old right now. So, you know, my generation, my era, our iPhone was baseball cards, right? I mean, that's what we spent our time staring at and poring over.
We hit these days with no sports going on. I've been kind of trying to dissect and find new things that we can talk about. And one of the things that I collected as a kid, it was starting lineups, right? And the idea behind a starting lineup was to make a 3D card, something that was actually there. It was living. So when you talk about baseball cards becoming the iPhone, that resonates, right? And you decided to take a pack of baseball cards and turn it into real life. So to me, this is the ultimate starting lineup.
Yeah, it's a good point that, I mean, the starting lineup figures, I mean, all of that just goes to this idea that, I mean, you're taking these, you have these objects, the cards, the figures that represent these these people, and we sometimes forget that they're like real people, right? But, you know, because as kids, we sort of see them as these larger than life kind of gods. And I think one of the really neat things for me about writing this book and taking this journey, because I drove 11,000 miles in 7 weeks to find all these guys, was it kind of, in a very satisfying, comforting way, kind of demystified that hero complex that we give to these guys, in the sense that I finished the book and they're still heroic to me, but not for the same reasons as they were as a kid. In other words, like, what really impressed me about them was their willingness to be very open and to be vulnerable and talking about a lot of things in their lives off the field that really humanized them.
Again, our guest right now is Brad Baloukjian, who wrote the book The Wax Pack. It'll be released tomorrow. A fascinating story. Let's dive into it, Brad. When you opened up The Wax Pack, tell me the players that you pulled out.
Sure. Well, so I'm kind of a weirdo. As a kid, I liked the guys that were not the stars. So, you know, most people, when they got to Dwight Gooden or Carlton Fisk, who were both in the pack, would be really excited. I was more disappointed because I was more excited by Don Carmen and Steve Yeager and Lee Mazzilli, the guys that were, I mean, these really were the guys that when I was a kid, I always liked those underdog players because I myself identified as an underdog. It's also because I just knew that, you know, when you try to write about people like Carlton Fisk and Doc Gooden, first of all, they might not talk to me, and second of all, how do you write about them in an original way because they've been, you know, chronicled so much.
I'm glad you brought up Steve Yeager. Being a Dodger fan, this was obviously the first name that I noticed on the list. Here's a guy that was a 1981 World Series champ. He was a 1981 World Series MVP, and that happened to be the same time frame where he demanded a trade from the Dodgers. Fascinating guy from a player's perspective. And so Steve Yeager was one of the names that I immediately jumped out at me. What was it like catching up with Steve Yeager, and what were some of the challenges for this particular player?
Well, with Yeager, so, you know, you read the file on him, you can do your research, and it's like, you know, he comes across as this, like, outgoing, kind of cocky guy, like, big party animal. So I'm thinking, like, oh, you know, because when I would approach each player, I would try to get them out of their typical environment and to try to do something fun. Like, I go to the gym with one guy, go to the zoo with someone. So with Yeager, I thought, oh, let's go drinking, like, let's go party, right? So I get there and I bring it up, and he tells me that he hasn't had a drop of alcohol since 1987, which is when he retired, and that ended up being something that was a common theme where a lot of guys, they got so depressed or so down when they stopped playing that either they started drinking a lot or they stopped drinking completely because they knew that was going to lead them in a bad direction. So that was sort of the first curveball with Yeager. The second one was, again, I expected him to be kind of a little more of the kind of gruff personality and maybe not to let down his guard. But within a few minutes of talking, he was telling me about his relationship with his father and sort of, or lack of relationship, and how even though he was really close to his dad was an alcoholic, and the first time he came to watch him play a game in Cincinnati, his dad got so drunk he passed out in the clubhouse, and how much that embarrassed him and really, you know, kind of ruined the relationship he had with his own father. And then it was really touching to see how Yeager has not repeated that same cycle, and that I got to meet one of his sons, Evan, who at the time was a college catcher, just like his dad, and to be able to see how close Yeager is with his son, you know, and how close their relationship is was really touching, considering what the trauma that he had been through with his own father.
Again, our guest right now, Brad Baloukjian, as we talk about his book, The Wax Pack. Fascinating story with Steve Yeager. Can you think of another story, Brad, off the top of your head, maybe one that wasn't exactly, you didn't have much, I guess, expectations for it, but by the time you sat down with this particular player, it turned out to be a pleasant surprise. Did that exist at all on this journey?
Yeah, I mean, plenty of times where guys, I mean, again, the one of the things that came up again was how many of them had these troubled relationships with their dads, and how many of them got kind of emotional talking about that. Rick Sutcliffe, Don Carmen, Randy Reddy, several of these guys, you know, had that experience. And I didn't go in knowing that was going to be the case. So it's you know, it's interesting that that would be such a common thread with these guys. And I was, you know, kind of taken off guard by some of that.
What were the difficulties that you encountered in trying to set this up? Once you open up the pack, you pull out your cards, you know who you have to try to track down. I know one player was deceased, if I remember correctly, just from reading the synopsis. So when you pull these cards out and you sit down to try to track these players down, what was the biggest hurdle you had to overcome?
Well, I think initially it's, you know, the fact that I didn't have a book deal, I didn't have an advance, I didn't have a resume in sports writing. I mean, it's not like I could call up and say, hey, you know, I'm Bob Costas, let's sit down. So to me, that's a testament to the fact that most of these guys were so willing to talk and so generous with their time. I mean, that's all about them being appreciative of, you know, their fans and their career. So it was trying to get the chance to talk to them. And then some of the star players, as I mentioned, Carlton Fisk, you know, he wouldn't talk to me. So for Fisk, I had to say, okay, well, what am I going to do? Do I just skip that card entirely? But no, I wanted to write a chapter on each player. So for Fisk, I found out from a source where he golfs in this really private resort in Sarasota, Florida. And I posed as a millionaire prospective home buyer to sneak onto the golf course to try to ambush him. So I went through some pretty extreme rogue tactics to try to get to these guys if they wouldn't talk to me, and I think it makes for some fun reading.
What could go wrong, right? It's pretty simple.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Again, our guest right now, Brad Baloukjian. He is the author of The Wax Pack. This book will be released tomorrow. It's going to be a fascinating read. He opened up a pack of baseball cards that were set in 1986, tracked down each of these players. When the book is complete, Brad, and you go back, obviously the journey is something that you can never put on page, right? These are visual thoughts. These are visual experiences, personal experiences that you're going to have forever. At what point in time, or did it ever occur to you, like, man, maybe this isn't worth it?
Well, I think when I was probably after the first leg in California, and I'm driving in Fort Stockton, Texas, and running out of oil, and like I'm eating crappy food, and now I find out, oh, the next guy, Gary Pettis, might not talk to me. I mean, there were those moments where I was like, what am I doing? I mean, I'm going out of pocket thousands of dollars to do this. You know, what if the rest, even though I had a good start, what if these guys don't talk to me? But, you know, I weathered that storm. I always believed in the bigger vision of the project, which was that this really is not just about baseball, but it's about these guys. And it's about their lives, but also the journey, I mean, literally the journey of trying to find them. So I knew even if a guy wouldn't talk to me, I can always, you know, write about that experience of trying to get to the guy and to be honest about my own feelings of disappointment and, you know, failure and so forth, because I'm very much an active character in the book. So it's unusual. Most sports books aren't like that, you know, where you have the narrator or the author as a character very much in the narrative itself.
Correct. Yeah, that definitely is a new take on it. And I guess I should ask the question, did every player eventually talk to you?
No. So I never got to speak to Dwight Gooden, for example, even though I was literally in his living room looking at all of the stuff in his house, which I know sounds maybe like, no, I did not break and enter there. I was granted access by his son, but he no-showed our appearance, and so I got very close, but not actually an audience with him. I didn't speak to him. I didn't speak to Vince Coleman. But for him, I went around Jacksonville, Florida, retracing his childhood. And Gary Pettis was actually, he still is a coach for the Astros. And he was basically, all the coaches for the Astros were told not to talk to the media by A.J. Hinch that year. So sort of not really Gary's fault, but wasn't able to speak to him.
Yeah, gee, I wonder why. with all that being said, if you go back over the course of it and you kind of, you know, recollect all the memories that you had with one another, who was the most difficult that you got to speak to?
I think the only guy that was a little guarded was Richie Hebner. And it may be because he was still actively coaching, so I was catching him in the middle of the season before a game. So, I mean, he strikes me as a guy that, if he lets his guard down, has plenty to say. but I didn't. I only had limited time with him, and so I couldn't. I didn't feel like I really got, you know, as much into his backstory as I did with other guys.
Once you tell these guys what you're doing, okay, I opened up this wax pack. This is what you were in this particular pack of cards. Now I'm trying to track down everyone. Was the reception from these guys mostly, wow, okay, this is an original, unique idea?
Yeah, they were generally impressed by my willingness to, you know, go to these extremes to drive all over the country to find them. I think they thought it was kind of a clever idea. You know, these guys are not, I mean, they're not overly nostalgic about their careers or having been baseball players. I was sort of surprised that they weren't even necessarily that interested in talking about all that. But I think they appreciated sort of my drive, my gumption to make this thing happen.
Brad, would you do this again? Would you ever consider a sequel, maybe with basketball or football?
No, I get asked that a lot, and I the answer is no, because not that I wouldn't enjoy it, but I just don't think it could ever be as good. You know, I think I certainly hope other people would. I would love other people to go do this, but you know, I mean, maybe outside of The Godfather and Star Wars, are there ever any sequels that are as good?
No, very rarely.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
So, I mean, there's other things. I mean, I'm generally interested and attracted to topics that where I can explore some of these deeper universal themes, and the journey and the quest is certainly an attractive idea. But to do it in this exact same way, I think would not be wise.
Brad Bellucci, and again, our guest right now is the author of The Wax Pack. This book will be out tomorrow. It'll feature stories with Carlton Fisk, Doc Gooden, Rance Mullenix, Steve Yeager, Gary Templeton, Gary Pettis, Randy Reddy, Don Carmen, Vince Coleman, Rick Sutcliffe, just to name a few. Brad, I definitely appreciate the time. I know you're a very busy man. It's a big day for you tomorrow. Before I let you go, please give all the information about the book and where people can get their copy, be it online or at bookstores.
Sure, thank you. So you can go to waxpackbook.com and get more information. You can get it, as they say, wherever books are sold. You can reach me on Twitter at waxpackbook. Love to talk to people and interact and hear what they think.
Brad, thank you so much for the time. It truly was a pleasure to speak with you. Congratulations on getting this work out, and best of luck in the next few weeks with the sales.
Thanks so much, Jordan. I appreciate it.
Again, Brad Bellucci joining us here on Drive Time Sports. The book will be out tomorrow. It's called The Wax Pack, On the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to talk baseball movies right after this. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports.
Can you send my baseball?
Sure. There.
Wow. Avoid the clap, Jimmy Dugan. Wow.
That's good advice.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Let's continue on with the baseball talk here today on Drive Time Sports. We just got through talking about baseball cards. Let's talk baseball movies. I think everybody has the itch for baseball. In fact, opening day was supposed to be last week, so we're missing a lot of baseball right now. Maybe you fill that time with a baseball movie. I'm going to bring in a great friend of mine, a great friend of the show, Steve Bordstein, who has joined us for years as we've talked baseball and college football and horse racing. Steve is going to join us today to have a conversation on baseball movies. Steve, it is a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking out the time today.
I appreciate the time very much, and just for the record, I have gone ahead and simulated the first five games of the Dodgers season for 2020. My girlfriend's son has a, what do they call it, Xbox thing. I don't know anything about video games, but I've just loaded in MLB 2020 into my television, and I play the games out. And right now, through the first four games of the 2020 simulated Dodgers season, the Dodgers are 4-0. They swept the opening series against the San Francisco Giants. They won the first game 14-0. And the last three games, they played two more against the Giants and one more against the Rockies. And so far, they're 4-0. So far, so good for the simulated 2020 season.
See, I think that should count. Maybe we get to see Mookie Betts in a Dodger uniform. Maybe. I think that possibility still exists.
I'm worried about that.
If the Boston Red Sox are able to dump Mookie Betts and it's not in vain, I question the integrity of the baseball gods. Let me put it that way.
And isn't it funny? They were supposed to release the punishment on the Red Sox, and they still haven't done that. Major League Baseball still hasn't done that. I'm like, what are you waiting for? The entire sports world is waiting to know just how much the Red Sox are going to get thrown at this upcoming season. At least I'm waiting for it. I just want to know how bad it's going to be. We still haven't heard a word about that yet.
Yeah, we should have found out months ago. Months ago, we should have found out. No baseball right now, so for those at home, those who do nothing but go home at night, maybe try to find something to watch on TV. Last night, I actually got to watch some football because ESPN re-aired the Rams-Chiefs game from two seasons ago. It was fantastic. That's one of the best football games you will find, right? We don't get that with baseball. So, Steve, if you bring up Netflix or maybe you bring up your old DVDs or Blu-rays, you're looking for a good baseball movie maybe that you can find online. What do you recommend in the form of baseball movies? And just a disclaimer, I know you and I share a very different taste in baseball movies.
We do. And I love documentaries. I love historically relevant, historically accurate motion pictures and documentaries also. So I kind of lean in that direction when I look at a baseball movie. So when baseball movies come out, the first thing, I do it with all sports movies. I'm a big, like, you mentioned horse racing a moment ago. Very quick aside, Seabiscuit, fairly historically accurate. Secretariat, not even close. It is not even a close representation of the actual people involved with Secretariat. Seabiscuit, much more historically relevant, much more historically accurate. As far as baseball is concerned, I lean towards the historically relevant films. So I lean towards Eight Men Out, a brilliant film about the 1919 Chicago Black Sox scandal. I lean towards that. I lean towards A League of Their Own. Fairly historically accurate about maybe not so much the personalities outside of the baseball teams, but the personalities within the women's baseball teams that played during World War II. Very fairly historically accurate, extremely well acted by Tom Hanks, Gina Davis, etc. So for that, for those two movies right there, if you're looking for a fun movie, then A League of Their Own, because it is fun. If you're looking for something that, again, because you and I were just talking about, you know, the start of the season and the Astros and the Red Sox. You want to know the greatest scandal of all time in Major League Baseball before the Astros? It was the Chicago Black Sox of 1919. And that's a tremendous representation of what that was. Brilliantly acted, John Mulaney. You've got, why can't I think of his name all of a sudden? Very good actor who's all of a sudden, whose name I just drew a blank on. It's extremely well done, fun movie, and it gives you a very in-depth look into one of the greatest betting scandals in sports of all time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do like the historically accurate in some regard. And look, I tell people this all the time. I may be one of the biggest Notre Dame homers that you have ever met. I can't stand the movie Rudy because none of it is true. Literally, none of it is true. He didn't have a brother that he couldn't stand. His dad was not his big was not trying to bring him down. His dad was actually one of his biggest fans.
They never carried him off the field.
They never carried him off the field. They never put his jerseys down on the table, the team. They never said, take my spot. Coach Dan Devine wanted Rudy to play. Dan Devine actually had to sign a waiver stating that he wouldn't sue for being the movie's main antagonist. So I absolutely hate the movie Rudy. None of it is true. That's why I do lean more towards the factual movies. 42 is fantastic, by the way. And that's not the movie I'm going to mention. But 42, if you want baseball action that is fairly, you know, historically it is accurate as well, this movie, the baseball action alone is fantastic in the movie 42.
Agreed. And the only, I think, and I guess it's, you know, I guess it's a reflection of the times. For as controversial a topic as 42 is and was at that time, the only factual inaccuracy is that it doesn't represent just how badly Jackie Robinson was treated
right.
throughout his Major League Baseball career. It's a great representation of what it was, but it could have been represented 1,000 times worse, but obviously you want to sell tickets and you want people to go see it. But it is a brilliant baseball movie. It's extremely well acted, and again, the baseball action, I think, in that movie, probably better than the baseball action you get in almost any other baseball movie, because again, you're dealing with actors, so you know you're dealing with stunt guys. So the way they present the game in 42 is far greater than probably most other baseball movies we see.
Yeah, and as you're talking about the way Jackie was treated, for instance, the scene with Ben Chapman, times that by about 100, and that's what actually happened in that particular event. They tone
exactly.
that. They tone that. And they had to.
You look at an old baseball movie with the story of Lou Gehrig. I think that one is much more gentle than actually how bad Lou Gehrig's condition actually was. So that was done in the '50s. Gary Cooper. So that's an old movie. But I mean, again, and the baseball action of that is mainly file footage from years ago. But 42 is, I think, for just from a pure action standpoint, probably one of the better shot movies as far as the actual game playing itself.
Again, our guest right now is Steve Bortstein. He's joining us to talk baseball movies. Okay, so give it to me, Steve. Tonight I go home. I got an itch for baseball. Give me the one movie that I should watch. Give me the one movie that I should avoid at all costs if we're talking baseball.
Okay, so for me, again, I mentioned the historically relevant movies, but if you want something that's somewhat accurate and somewhat fun at the same time, I will always, always recommend Bull Durham. It is, to me, one of the classic films. And you and I were talking earlier about Kevin Costner. You're not a big Kevin Costner guy. Two of the greatest baseball movies ever made are Kevin Costner movies. Okay, and no, I'm not talking about Field of Dreams. They are Bull Durham and For Love of the Game. Those are two of the best baseball movies, in my mind, that have ever been made. But Bull Durham is beautiful in the sense of the way minor league baseball actually is. And these guys aren't making a lot of money. They're traveling on buses. They've got groupies who you wouldn't even look at it if you were in a big city. It's a fun movie. It's got great dialogue. The writing is amazing. Susan Sarandon is beautiful as Tim Robbins' sort of plaything during the movie. The dialogue between Robbins and Costner is exceptional. If you've not seen it, or if you're just looking to watch something fun again, I will always recommend Bull Durham. For me, bar none, the most complete, I guess, of all baseball movies. Now, the one that I would absolutely not recommend, and get ready, because Jordan's going to lose his mind here in a second, is Major League.
Oh, no, come on.
I hate this movie in every way imaginable. First off, historically accurate? Not even close. I get it. They're the Cleveland Indians, so therefore they don't want a damn thing. They never will either. It is a cartoonish-like movie that I have absolutely no interest in whatsoever. Charlie Sheen, we only got a small snippet of just how insane he was during the filming of that movie, and then the actual movie itself. They portray the play-by-play guy. He's a moron, and I get it. Bob Uecker. I mean, he's the perfect foil for that anyway. It's a terrible movie. It's got no premise whatsoever. It's got nothing based on reality whatsoever. And to me, it's just a garbage movie. Tom Berenger is god-awful in it. Renee Russo is just one of the worst actresses I've ever watched. I would avoid that movie at all costs.
Oh, my goodness. You didn't like James Gammon as Lou Brown?
No.
Oh, he's phenomenal in that role. Phenomenal.
I hate everything about that movie.
Oh, I love Wesley Snipes as Willie Mays Hayes. A lot of comic relief there. Now, for me, if I have to pick a baseball movie that I'm going to go home and I'm going to watch tonight, especially being the father of a daughter, for me, it's League of Their Own. And I think this is probably my favorite baseball movie. I mean, it's 42 has got to be up there as well, but I really love League of Their Own. And obviously, there's some I guess the basis of the movie is historical, right? That is true, the way everything went down. As far as the characters are concerned, they're not exactly true. For instance, Tom Hanks plays Jimmy Dugan. I don't know if you are aware of this, but that's a loose character based off of both Jimmy Fox and Hack Wilson. I don't know if you were aware of that or not, but that's what League of Their Own is kind of based around. But it's about when women played professional baseball. It is the only Rosie O'Donnell movie that has aged properly, I will tell you that much.
And the only Madonna movie that has actually aged properly.
True. True. Very true.
Desperately Seeking Susan, anyone? So, yeah, no. I mean, as far as those two actresses are concerned, you're right. It really does carry over well. Madonna's brilliant, and this is kind of at the beginning of the downslide, really, of Madonna's, like, worldwide international fame. But she was brilliant, and Gina Davis is an Academy Award-winning actress who, you know, at that time we didn't know a lot. We knew a lot about her, but we didn't know she had, you know, that ability to do that. So it was, in that sense, and Tom Hanks, I mean, it's the baseball signing scene, the yelling at the girl. There's no crying in baseball. If you just want, again, somewhat factually accurate, there's a few loose pieces here and there, but there are in almost any baseball movie. Any movie based on a true story is going to have some Hollywooding it up, if you will. But a fun movie, and Tom Hanks, one of his greatest roles.
No question. As far as baseball movies, I would stay away from. I just mentioned I don't like Major League 3. I was curious the other night on Disney Plus. My daughter wanted to watch a movie, and so I said, let's watch a baseball movie. And I put Rookie of the Year on. Don't do that. Not a good movie.
Oh, it's god-awful.
It's horrible. It's horrible. And I'm a play-by-play snob, and I love John Candy, but John Candy as a play-by-play announcer just didn't work. Daniel Stern as the idiotic pitching coach is absolutely horrible. Gary Busey, I believe his name was Chet Stedman, who was the aging pitcher. That is a horrible, horrible movie. And here's,
all you had to do was just say Gary Busey.
Exactly, right. And here's the other, I guess, idea that tells me it was so horrible. My 5-year-old daughter wanted to continue to watch it. That's how I know it's not very good. Stay away from Rookie of the Year. Stay away from it. Steve, you and I asked this question on Facebook about a week ago. We asked about what was people's favorite baseball movies. We got a variety of different answers. I think there was about 60 different responses on there and what they preferred to watch as far as baseball movies are concerned. We're going to have to revisit that conversation because, let's be honest, there's not a lot to talk about right now. We want to continue to talk about the baseball diamond. So how about next week we go over some of the responses and we'll dissect those movies and give them a yay or a nay. How does that sound?
Done. The Siskel and Ebert show will continue at that point, yes.
Absolutely. Steve Bornstein again joining us to talk baseball movies. Fun conversation, fun abstract conversation today. Steve Bornstein joining us here on the show. We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. We'll put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Step away from the baseball diamond. Let's close out today's show by talking NFL football. I'll bring in Travis Anderson to help close it out. Travis, it was announced today that the next NFL playoffs, it'll be 2021 by the time we get there in January, have now been expanded to 14 teams. Yay or nay? You like it?
Do I like it? No, I don't like when we keep adding things. I think the NFL was fine how there were six teams in the AFC and six in the NFC. I like that. I like 12.
The question is it going to water it down? In some cases, maybe. But I also think that it really could balance some things out. I mean, there have been some good teams that have missed the postseason. Now, if I say that, you could easily say, well, there's been some 7-9 teams that have qualified for the playoffs when we take six. So now are we going to get 6-10 teams? I understand that, but if you apply the new format, going back to 2002, 9-8-8 teams and none with losing records would have been the 7 seeds. Over that same time period, 8 of the 9, 10, and 6 teams that missed the postseason would have made it under the new format. Right? So had this format existed just this last year, Pittsburgh, who was playing good football at the end of the season, they'd have made it. They were 8-8. They would have gotten in. And the Rams, they were 9-7. They were the only team that had a winning record that did not make the postseason. They would have been in. So let's put it this way. Green Bay was the number two seed. Would Green Bay have wanted to play the Los Angeles Rams? I don't think so.
No.
I don't think that would have been a good matchup for Green Bay. On the flip side, if we're looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers, did the Steelers have a legitimate chance? Yeah, I think they did the way that defense was playing. So, really, I don't know that there's a huge drop-off between that sixth seed and that seventh seed. I really don't.
No, I'm with you. If you go look at it, so now what, 14 of the 32 teams make it, so that's 43% of the league.
Yeah.
If you compare it to the other sports, baseball has 10 of the 30 teams that qualify, that's 33%. The NBA has 16 of 30 teams, that's 53%. And hockey has 16 of 31, it's 51%. So the NFL is still, you know, around 43%, so that's good. We got to keep it at this number, though. I'm sick of adding, you know, like NCAA wants to add more teams each year, blah, blah, blah. We need to keep it at 14 now.
It's all about money. That's the bottom line. That's what it comes down to. We can sit here and debate, is it good for the game? What are the odds of a team with a losing record winning the Super Bowl? We can sit here and we can talk about this all we want. The wild card round and the interest of the wild card round continues to grow because the NFL is worth that much. It's just a fact. I mean, if we're talking about broadcasters and we're talking about streaming services, and look, I haven't seen this mentioned one time yet, but I firmly believe that the Sunday ticket through DirecTV, that's going to be gone relatively soon. Yep. The NFL is going to have its own streaming service. Major League Baseball already does that. They have their own streaming service, right? I think we get to that point. The NFL and the NFLPA projected a total of $150 million in new revenues from the broadcast rights and the stadium revenue. That's exactly why this is taking place.
It's all about money. So we expand, it's all right. We got to keep it at this number. Now you get three games wild card weekend Saturday and three on Sunday. So more football.
More football. I don't hate it. It puts a lot of emphasis on becoming the one seed, which, you know, I'm curious to see the way teams will play that card, especially as we get deeper into the season. For instance, if a team was 14-1 going into the final game of the regular season and the number two seed was 13-2 and the number three seed was 12-3, you wouldn't be playing if you were that team that's 14-1 because you were guaranteed a bye.
Yep.
You can't anymore.
No, you can't because, you know, that bye is not there. So you have to, you know, continue to play throughout the year. So it's going to be interesting to see when we get, you know, closer to weeks, you know, 13, 14, 15, and 16, how important that becomes. And then week 17 might matter now.
And the stat, we have not had a team in the Super Bowl that did not have a bye since 2012. Think
Ravens,
about that.
Right?
The Ravens. That was the last team to do it. Out of time of this edition of the show. Fun one today. We had some abstract conversations. Tomorrow we'll talk more baseball. We're also going to be joined by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartans. We'll recap the All-State selections. Emory had two. We'll get to that on the show tomorrow. Out of time today. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Busker. Be safe. We are out.